Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast, and happy January. So we're going to talk more and more this month all about dry January. So myself and my beautiful guest, Kelly Cooney, who is the founder of Alcohol Uncensored, we are going to get, well, we'll get into all the things we always talk about on here, which is no more booze, obviously. But we're going to talk a lot about dry January. Kelly, you're so welcome. How are you?
Thanks, Olivia. Thanks for having me. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. 2026 is our year, Kelly, isn't it?
It is. Certainly is, yeah.
We are going to be absolutely, I'm going to look like Kate Moss by the end of the year. So do you want to go give us a little bit of background about who you are, what you do, and what has brought you here today?
Yeah, sure. So conscious that I don't want to be a serial oversharer, like I said earlier, I am an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic through AA and working on the 12-step program. I didn't find sobriety through the 12-step program. I found it initially in 2021 through a community called Over the Influence. So I found that community in 2021 when I was starting to kind of get really bad hangovers, and alcohol was kind of causing me some issues, and I wanted more out of life. So I joined that community in 2022, and I got lots of periods of sobriety in that community and had the most amazing experiences and met the most amazing friends in that community. So I ended up in the prior rehab in 2022. I joined the community in 2021 and I got periods of sobriety. I got like 60 days, 40 days, 50 days. And in that time, I had made some great friends and I was doing lots of running and exercising and enjoying myself, but I just couldn't stay sober. I could get long periods and I just couldn't stay sober. And in January 22, I had a very long relapse of like 2 weeks of just drinking day and night. And I went into the Priory Rehab and was treated for depression, anxiety and bulimia. Now, I was drinking alcoholically and the psychiatrists and doctors knew that, but they felt that I was using alcohol as a coping mechanism and I needed to deal with the other things that were happening in my life. So that was in February 2022. And I came out of there and felt like a new person. And I got fully involved in Over the Influence. I started being tech support for them. We went hiking, Snowdon, Ben Nevis, Yorkshire Three Peaks, just living my best life. And I ran my first marathon in 2022 as well. After 10 months, I relapsed. And the learning from that was I had stopped connecting with people on Zooms. I used to do like 5 Zooms a week. So within the community, there was Zooms every single day and you would go on the Zooms and just talk about what's happening in your life. Sometimes it would just be what you made for your dinner last night and sometimes it would be really traumatic stuff that you wanted to talk about or kind of struggles. And I'd kind of fallen away from that a little bit. So when I relapsed, I thought, right, okay, get back on the Zooms. And start connecting with people. And I did that and I got 16 months sober and then I relapsed again. And when I say relapse, compared to my previous relapses, it was like a bottle of wine. Well, that went okay. I'll be fine next time. And then it was like a couple of bottles of wine and that kind of went on for a few months. And then in June this year, I had been training for a few months to do a team Ironman. with a couple of the other members in Over the Influence, Ian and Neil. Ian was doing the swim, Neil was doing the cycle, and I was doing the run. Because since 2022 to 2025, I had become addicted to running. So I had did 5 marathons, 4 half marathons, 2 ultra marathons. And I had been really training for this marathon and raising money for Alcohol Change UK, because that was the chosen charity. And I did so much work. I contacted different authors and different companies and got raffle prizes and spent so much time in that, because it was really important to me. And I drove down. And the reason I talk about this is because it took me a long time to accept I was an alcoholic. And when I went into Priory Rehab in July this year, I realised that I was powerless over alcohol and that I was an alcoholic, and I accepted that. And this, I carry a lot of shame through this experience, but I think it's important to talk about it. Yeah. Because the night before I drove down to take part in that event, and I drove down to Northumberland, so it was like a 2-hour drive. I met up with Neil and Ian, we had a lovely meal, and everybody went to bed for the night. And I'd had a kind of tough time over the past, the previous few weeks, kind of personally, different things that were happening. And but I felt fine. I wasn't talking to anyone, but I felt fine in myself. But clearly, subconsciously, I wasn't dealing with things. And that's a pattern in my life, not dealing with things. So when everyone went to their bed, I thought, I'll just have a couple of ciders, like just a couple of fruit ciders. What can go wrong there? And that led to me waking up the next morning, not being able to stop. And by the time it came round to me running the marathon at 5 o'clock the next day, I had a camel pack of wine and steady water on my back trying to run a marathon. And I ran 10K and had to pull out. And I was absolutely devastated. And I drunk for the next week, day and night. Lots of self-harm, lots of running away. And thankfully, I got into the Priory Rehab in July this year. And I was in there for 28 days. And when I was in there, I found out that Over the Influence were closing their doors. And there was a lot of people kind of upset about that, because there were so many people in that community that they'd got sober and found the joy of alcohol-free living in that community. And one of my friends had said to me, we should create a community. And I was like, don't be so stupid. There's no way I can do that. And then I was in the Priory and I was learning about myself and I was learning about where alcohol had taken me. And all I could think about was I didn't know anything about alcohol and addiction and alcoholism. Now, my dad was an alcoholic and he was an AA his whole life, from the age of 22, long before I was born, long before any of my brother or sister were born too. But we never spoke about it. I didn't know what alcoholism was. It feels like I'm all over the place here, sorry.
No, not at all. But isn't it? No, we'll pick, don't worry. Look, I'm all over the place as well. But we'll just maybe pick up on that little bit as well. So it is the great unspoken.
Yeah.
Isn't it? So yeah. Not, but like, I can tell you so many of the clients that I work with, so many people that I know, like they exactly the same thing. They grow up in a home with a parent who is addicted to alcohol, and yet not one word has ever been uttered. Yeah. So there's this massive, again, you know, thing that's happening in their lives. And that's what Gabor Mate says about trauma. So it's not the thing that happens. It's how we internalize it and how somebody around us helps us make sense of it. But there was nobody at home helping you make sense of what you clearly knew was wrong.
Yeah.
I don't mean that's judgment, but there's stuff going on. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know there wasn't even Olivia, like it just was. I knew my dad went to AA meetings and that was fine. And I think probably my first, the kind of traumatic thing that happened to me in my childhood, and I found it really difficult to call it trauma, because my mum did her absolute best, did more than her best. My dad took a brain hemorrhage at the age of 32. I was 6, my sister was 4, my brother was 8. And he was left a vegetable, and my mum brought him home from the hospital and taught him to walk and feed himself again. And so we were really young when that happened, and my mum was amazing. I didn't know about the struggles my mum had, because she looked as if she had it all together. So there was a part of that that we never spoke about. So when I started to not be able to deal with things, I thought I was flawed, because I couldn't deal with things the way my mum dealt with it. So, and when I first learned about that and I get called trauma, I was like, that's not trauma. But as a child, it is. It's your perception of how things are in the home at that age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but the alcohol thing never got spoke about. So I didn't really, I knew my dad went to AA meetings, but I didn't know what it was. And so when I was in the prior, I started to think, do you know, maybe I can do this. I've worked in IT for 15 years. I did a lot of studying through the Open University, never finished anything because of alcohol. Always had great goals and great plans. And I thought, I think I could build a website. I've managed a website. I think I could build a website and an app. So I started getting in the evening, started working towards like doing the branding of it and the website of it and what I could do. And because I'm so passionate about prevention, not just intervention. For me, it was an intervention. I had hit rock bottom. And my first rock bottom was 2016, and I was taken to AA meetings. And I was in those AA meetings thinking, this isn't for me. I've not drove the car drunk. I've not been in hospital. I've not been in a fight. All of those things. And by the way, a lot of those yets came into my life. But at the time, there was no, the intervention was just go to an AA meeting. There was no looking at the bigger picture of what's going on here. And when I think about the pain that I've caused myself and my family and friends around me with my addiction, is just, it's devastating. And then I look at the amount of people that went through the doors and over the influence, great friends of mine who didn't hit rock bottom, who started to question, like yourself, started to question alcohol when it just started not serving them well, and they're living these amazing lives. So I thought, well, why not create another community? I've got the experience of over the influence. I've got the passion that I don't want people to hit rock bottom and go through the things that I went through. And also having three boys of my own, 26, 24 and 16, I'm massive about education, about talking to them. So when I speak to my 16-year-old, his friends have just started drinking, and I sat him down and I said, well, this is what life is. You've got addiction on your dad's side, you've got addiction on my side. It may or may not happen to you. It's up to you whether you want to test the waters and start drinking, or you could just live your life without alcohol, like my friend Freddie, like Susan, like, and I could name off names who were living there, and myself, but obviously it's been a bit traumatic for me, but so many people living their life joyfully without alcohol in it. So it's about having those honest conversations. It's the
absolutely
point I'm making.
And I love that you bring in prevention into it as well. So like, and we talked about this just before we started recording, you know, I suppose when we look at alcohol on the spectrum and there's a couple of ends of it, and I always associate myself around the middle, that yeah, kind of middle, messy middle area, you know. But like, how do, and maybe there was points in my life that I was closer towards the end of it than, and then I came back to the beginning, and who knows, you know, whether I would have gone. But it's about, it's knowing where you are today when you're yeah actually able to make a decision around it.
Yeah.
As opposed to when it, because alcohol use is insidious, like it's a progressive yeah thing. So it yeah just, and we all know this, like the first time we ever drank, you got pissed on like vodka and then it takes you yeah 10, you know, so it gradually gets worse. So how do you know? And I just love that, you know, when we open, I suppose, the channels of communication and we're talking openly to people about struggles, then automatically as well we kind of begin to reduce stigma. Because yeah, what always is so shocking to me is that, like, so we give up cigarettes and everybody hails us as some breed of a hero, yeah, right? We give up alcohol, or, you know, but even we are become addicted to alcohol as opposed to cigarettes, and we're deeply flawed. It's just yeah, it's just so annoying, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. And do you know the thing is as well, what I will be forever grateful for, I mean, Shaz and Ben creating that community was just, I mean, I owe them my life. Shaz is just, she's an angel sent from heaven for so many people. But the support they gave me, but not only that, they helped me deal well with the shame and stigma, because I was hitting rock bottoms, and it was only myself and probably one other that those kind of really serious addiction issues there. Everyone else, but it made, when I spoke to people, there was no judgment or anything when we were speaking about it. And you know, a lot of the time as well, it helped people open up a little bit and say, well, actually, I'm starting to drink a bit too much. It opens up the conversation around everybody, and it starts to reduce the shame. So as much as it's it's difficult to have these conversations. It's just so important. It's about breaking that chain, I think, is like it's breaking the chain of addiction, because it's an addictive substance. I truly believe that anyone can come an alcoholic rock bottom at the doors of AA. I truly believe that. I think there is a genetic predisposition element of it. But I think then you throw environmental situations and trauma, and I honestly think it could happen to anyone.
Absolutely. ACEs. So like adverse childhood experiences. So it actually has been proven that if you experience more than 6 adverse childhood experiences, then you are more predisposed to like a whole range of mental illness, a whole range of health complications, in terms of, because the systems in which our bodies work affect everything. So like you know, it's not cut and dry. Nothing is cut and dry, really. So you know, instead of spending the billions on whatever we spend, the billions are on, like, we need to be taught how to parent for a start, you know, so nobody really knows how to deal with all the trials and tribulations that come with that. But how do we heal our hurts? Like, how do we heal our hurts without, you know, shopping online or smoking cigarettes or vaping? Like, how do we manage then to self-soothe? We all learned how to self-soothe in maybe the 80s and 90s, but now it's all about skill development, developing skills to help us cope, because nobody told us how to cope. And what are the skills that you've learned along the way to help you cope?
Most of the skills for me is talking to people. That was new to me. I didn't talk to anyone. So when I started, I've always been quite, I always say, I think it was Fern Cotton that said that I'm a happy hermit. I like my own company, but it's not good for me. And I think that being able to talk to people and open up and share the little concerns to the big concerns just kind of removes the bullshit from a lot of it. Excuse my language. But so I think for me, talking to people is a big thing. And being able to, my self-esteem was in my boots. Like my absolute, when I first learned that I had low self-esteem, I was like, I'm quite a confident person when I go into situations. My self-esteem was in my boots. And I've also learned as well that I'm a very insecure person. I'm a very controlling person. And when that was first pointed out to me as well, that I was a controlling person, I was like, I'm not controlling. But I like to control so it's like if something's not happening, I try to make it like, so if the boys are maybe arguing with each other, I'm like, wait, how can I fix it? I want to be the fixer. And that's part of being controlling. I think it's been aware of my character, my negative character traits is a big one. And taking the time to just stop and think. And a big thing for me as well, overwhelm. If I get overwhelmed and I'm tired, that turns to fear for me. And now I can sit and think, right, okay, what are you scared of? And I'm like, no, you're not scared, Kelly. You just need a piece of chocolate or a sleep. It's like sometimes it can be as small as that.
Absolutely. And you know, we have like a window of tolerance. So, and I think that's a really valuable lesson for people to learn, and even myself. So I talk about myself very recently. It's maybe not the most becoming story I'll tell, but like last week, you know, over Christmas, and Christmas is so intense. Gary was working late, I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I had to have something in, and the only time I could do it was very early in the morning. He was working late, so I was bringing and collecting the kids from school, there was lessons, there was, you know, preparation for Christmas, we were having guests, all this kind of stuff. Like, I mean, layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of overstimulation, right? Even though I know all about the window of tolerance, and I teach all about the window of tolerance, I didn't realize till after I absolutely lost my shit, had to drive the car onto the side of the road, shout out the window, I just can't do this anymore, did I realize, oh my god, my window of tolerance is literally obliterated, you know. So again, it's to have that awareness. You know, I was in that kind of hyper arousal, completely dysregulated, because none of my needs were being met. So I wasn't putting myself first. I was putting everything else first. And that was the first thing to go. So that's a very helpful thing that we need to realize when our window of tolerance is very narrow. And around kind of December, January, our window of tolerance is going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot more extra stimulants.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's for me, like the biggest thing, and obviously I want to talk about the community as well, because connection with like-minded people is so important to me. If I look at my, when I've picked up a drink, it's when I've stepped away and haven't been connecting with people and haven't been talking. It's when I start to then forget how to share my feelings and how to talk about things. And I think that's how community is so important, because life does get busy and you do start to put people before you. So just having that hour to come on and talk to people that are maybe going through the same things as you, or just letting off a bit of steam. Sometimes it's not even serious things that are going on, but if you don't talk about them, they start to accumulate in your mind and grow into something bigger that you've created by catastrophizing and trying to predict the future and all sorts. So yeah, talking is the biggest thing for me.
Absolutely. And I was out for dinner with one of my longest, greatest friends and her sister just a couple of days ago. And I had got a DM, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know how to respond. And I was absolutely catastrophizing it. And we sat down, the three of us, and I kind of read them what I wrote back, and they were like, "That's perfect. That's a great response." And I was like, "Oh, you know, where would have literally made it into the biggest mountain in the world had I dealt with that myself." And again, a problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah.
You know, when we get very insular and into our own heads, that's when the wheels come off.
Yeah. And the amount of people that will come on the community Zooms, they'll come on and they'll be, so they'll come on and think, right, okay, I'll come on the Zoom for an hour and talk. So they'll come on and talk for an hour and then feel fine after it and not need that glass of wine anymore. Because quite often you have that glass of wine or beer just to try and soothe that feeling of whatever it is you're feeling, whether it's stress or just overwhelm. And you can come on and just talk to people for an hour and have a laugh. And it just removes actually the desire for needing anything to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and like we all, I suppose we all started drinking for different reasons. We all continue to drink for different reasons. But it's, again, becoming self-aware of, and, you know, you talk a lot about kind of reflecting back onto your past or whatever. But it's just kind of getting to grips with that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it evolves. I mean, I did a podcast with Over the Influence in 2023, would have been 2024, when I got my year sobriety. And when I look at that, I've evolved so much since then. It was like I didn't become an alcoholic overnight. And when I drink alcoholically, there was no acceptance of actually being an alcohol. There was no acceptance of alcoholism as an illness.
Yeah.
As much as I would be like, "Oh, that's a shame for them. They're an alcoholic." There was no compassion for myself that I've got this illness, and yeah, I've made a lot of mistakes and hurt a lot of people. Accepting it as an illness, like, so I go to AA meetings and do the AA program, and I treat that as the treatment to my illness, the treatment to alcoholism, the way insulin would be to a diabetic. I truly believe that now, but I need Alcohol Uncensored community for the positivity and the hiking and the learning. So like, we're going to be have some courses throughout January. I'm doing one on limiting beliefs. Susan's doing one on values. We've got Andy, one of our Zoom hosts, is doing growth and fixed mindsets, because we've all did our coaching through Andy Ramage. So we all did the
Brilliant.
Positive psychology coaching.
Yeah.
I've not did anything with mine yet, because obviously, as I spoke of, it's been quite a chaotic year. I've not had time to do anything, and I don't have any intention of doing any coaching at the moment.
Okay.
But limiting beliefs is a big one for me, and I think it'll be a good one for Dry January. Hopefully we've got some community members joining us to do Dry January, and hopefully they'll enjoy it that much that they'll want to stay and go for that 100 days at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And just when you talk about limiting beliefs, like, I'm getting a lot of coaching at the minute around subconscious and limiting beliefs. That is a joy. So I was up, I do it early in the morning. So we were up at 7 o'clock this morning doing that. But again, so like 5% of what we do is in our conscious awareness, and 95% is our subconscious. So stuff that's happened from, like, you know, very early on, that is a Pandora's box that you mightn't want to open. But anyway, that's just a little FYI. You know, a study came out yesterday. Well, I was made aware of it yesterday, just around dry January. So we might talk a little bit about that, but I'm going to give a little overview of it now. But researchers from Brown University analysed 16 studies tracked over 150,000 people who participated in dry January, right? So they looked at all of the results of these 16 studies, right? So the people who abstained from alcohol lost weight, had sharper concentration, increased energy and sustained behavior change. So most continued drinking even less after January ended. OK, so we all know that I did loads of dry Januaries before I gave up. So there's now we have evidence of 150,000 people who've taken part. But I'll just give you the kind of recap then of what happens over the first week. So in week one, your liver repair begins. So as Liver Farley, as I used to call my old liver, that began to repair after week one. Week two, your gut barrier heals. So all of the lovely things in our gut microbiome, it begins to heal. Like our intestinal lining regenerates, digestion improves, energy levels increase, inflammation decreases, and we stop being as bloated. Then, oh, week three, this is very interesting. Our dopamine receptors reset. So they start returning to healthy levels. So our cravings for sugar, processed foods and alcohol drop significantly, and your mood stabilizes. That's another good one. And then just in week four, the brain fog lifts completely. Anxiety and depression decrease. Your skin begins to glow. You have better concentration, significantly more energy, lower blood pressure and improved mood and emotional regulation. So, like, you know, dry January is kind of a no-brainer, isn't it, Kelly?
It is, definitely. But I think it's more than that as well. Well, I think in dry January, it's more about just removing the booze as well. Because I think if you remove the booze in January, it's like you get all these things, like you feel great, your mood lifts. Because I did it so many times. Your mood lifts, you feel great, you get energy, you look better. And then it's like, well, dry January is finished. What do? I go back to those old habits. I think you need to build a life that you look at and think, I'm not going back to have a drink. There's no way I want to give up this life and I'm easily beer. And I think that's why, especially within the community that we've got at the moment, I want to try and pack as much learning and as much activities, hikes. We've got, so there's a lot going on in January. And the reason I'm doing it is because I've got people close to me that I'm like, oh, can you just give it a proper go? And don't just give up alcohol. Because for me, when I first gave up, and I need to say this as well, because a lot of people will think, well, why would we join a community with someone that's 104 days sober and has relapsed so many times? So don't base it on my sobriety, just base it on the kind of what the community's about. And the community's about living a joyful, sober life, full of things that you wouldn't give up for a measly beer or a glass of wine. And when I first removed alcohol, I had to get, like, and I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. I really, one of the biggest things, the biggest benefits I had in rehab in July compared to the other people in there were thinking, what am I going to do if I can't drink? And I was like, there's so much you could do when you don't drink, because I'd felt it.
Exactly. And you know, let's challenge the kind of negativity around relapsing, right? Yeah. So, and you know, there's so much learning in those relapses, in those slips. You're literally learning every single time you do it. Like, it's not failure, you're learning a new skill. Yeah. So, and I always liken to, you know, babies starting to walk as well. So they don't like just stop and, you know, sit in their bum for the rest of life. They keep going and keep going and keep going. Yeah. And the amount you learned, you know, do you feel that, I don't know, I knew when I, like, deep down, when I had my last drink, like, I literally handed it to Gary. I was like, this is the last drink I'll ever drink. Take a picture of me like the wind. And it just something clicked. I don't know. How were you about, is there?
Yeah, so there's, so when I had this, obviously, I said I was in rehab in July for 28 days and I picked up a drink on the 7th. Now, I couldn't tell you the last time that I only drank for one day When I picked up a drink, I was on it for a week, day and night. And I had that drink in the 7th and woke up in the 8th and had a drink. And then whatever happened, I was just like, I am not doing this. I got straight onto a meeting. I was like, I'm not doing this again. I put it down to, and this is obviously probably not the most popular thing to say, but I, on the 8th of September, I was like, God, please help me here. Mm. Now, I had said many times before in a really bad hangover, God, please help me not feel this shit because I feel rubbish. On the 8th, I'd only been drinking a day. I hadn't even had a lot to drink. And I was just like, please help me. I do not want to live this life. And since then, I know if I connect with people in the community and I go to a couple of AA meetings a week and I look after myself and put myself before other people, not my boys and my mum, but, you know, I always end up putting other people's feelings before my own. As long as I make sobriety my number one, I know I don't need to drink again, and I am the most strong, content in my sobriety that I've ever been. And that's off the back of a very short relapse compared to what my other relapses have been before. The biggest learning I got from that was that I know there's a solution. And again, I know a lot of people don't like the kind of hand over to your higher power AA thing, but I know that if I follow the solution of AA, which is go to meetings, connect with people, speak honestly, then I never need to drink again because I don't want to drink. And it's not that I don't want to drink because it causes me so much chaos in my life when I pick up a drink, but that's not my main reason for not wanting to drink. I don't want to drink because I love life sober. Like, my life has grew in so many different ways. I just wasn't treating my illness, and now I'm treating my illness, and my hope is that by creating this community that's going to have, like, in January we've got 75 hard, so there's a group always kicking off 75 hard, which is I've signed up to do that. So
so do you want to explain what 75 hard is?
So 75 hard, and we've actually got a Zoom tonight, so one of our hosts, Ian, he's a great guy, he does all the kind of diet and fitness stuff within the community. So we've got a Zoom tonight to talk about what it is. And I think there's going to be a 75 hard and a 75 soft for some people that don't want to do the full lot. So it's basically, I think you've got to do one piece of outdoor exercise every day, one piece indoors. You've got to read a chapter of a book, no ultra processed food. So there's a lot of rules around it, but there's going to be like a softer version as well. And within the 75 days hard, which obviously that goes further along than dry January, so the hope is we'll get people joining in dry January and keep going, because it's not till you get past those 100 days and you build up these new habits and this new lifestyle that you think, why would I want to go back to that? Like, why would I want to go back to that life? And and I struggled to, I kept falling back, but that's because I fell right over that step into full-blown alcoholism. You don't need to do that. So if you're having these feelings now of this isn't serving me anymore, or I'm starting to be someone I don't want to be when I have a drink, if you stop now and connect with like-minded people and build this life that's not worth giving up for a measly beer or a glass of wine, then that's the gold. So yeah, so we've got 75 hard, we've got a couple of hikes, and we've got the three courses we're putting into January to try and say to people, look, build a life.
Perfect. And, you know, and I think the community is an incredible thing. Look, I believe in a higher, also I believe in a higher power too. Like, that is one thing that I'm massively guided by in my own life. I had a beautiful moment singing a song today. Just, you know, a feeling within myself of incredible love, you know, and it was, you know, that song Oceans. It's fabulous. Where are you based? You're in Scotland, and then it's online. So do you welcome anybody from any corners?
Yeah, anyway, so we've got people in Berlin, we've got people in America. One of our hosts is from America, Rich, and all over the UK. There's actually only myself and one other person from Glasgow. So generally when we do the hikes, we've got a hike on the 29th of December, and that's in the Lake District. So it's usually like 2 or 3 hour travel for everyone. We try and make it as central as possible.
Okay.
So we've got daily Zooms where we all connect on Zoom daily. And we have a kind of weekly diet and fitness focused Zoom, which is tonight at 8 o'clock. We've got book club as well. So there's a lot going on. It's just, as I say, if I only had, and there'll be people that will maybe listening to this podcast that are in AA, and they'll be like, they're just all for AA, and it's great. If I only had AA in my life, I don't think I would be so positively joyful about sobriety. It's a life I'm building within that, within the community, about learning about yourself. Like, yeah. My biggest limiting belief is I like my own company. I don't like socialising with people, and I don't like talking. I'm not a very good talker, and yet I'm running my own community now. I'm talking on Zooms every single night. Yeah. Still uncomfortable doing it, but you push yourself outside your comfort zone when you remove the shitty booze from your life.
Absolutely, and that's the growth, you know. Yeah. And I'm sure you've done like a whole, especially in the coaching as well, this yeah. values, you know, so a values exercise. So a lot of us didn't know what our values were. So like, what are your values? Well, sure, they're your North yeah. Star. They're what you want to do. Yeah. Like if you sit down, and especially because like it's a brand new year now. So like yeah. if you sit down, write out on a piece of paper, where do you want this year to go? Like, what are the things you want to achieve? I've had a manifestation, a lady who's really into manifestation on a couple of weeks ago, and it's the exact same thing. I firmly believe you can manifest anything into your life, but we just yeah. need to sit down and get clear on what we actually want, yeah. the direction in which we want our life to go. And absolutely, when we remove the booze, anything is possible. Anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anything is possible. But I mean, my life's just flipped 360. I'm a little bit like, what the hell are you doing? I've given up my job. I'm like, my job for 15 years in IT. I'm just like, it's okay.
And you're doing you're doing the community as your job.
I'm doing that part time. I'm working. My brother's got a marketing company, so I've taken a part time job with him because I knew that. So I've taken a massive drop in salary. Yeah. But I knew that if I wanted to grow the community and help as many people as possible remove alcohol from their life, I had to give it my full arse, as Sharon Hartley used to say. I had to give it my full arse.
But that's so brave, Kelly. So you're in the same job for 15 years. There's a level of security there. There's a level of comfort. Yeah. And you just say, see you later.
Private healthcare's gone. Car's gone. I'm chucking it on the train and everything now, but it's my passion. It's not only my passion, I believe in it. I've seen so many people come through the doors of all the communities. Like, there's so many communities. Not only, I mean, my community might not be a good fit for people, and I see that all the time. You find your tribe.
Absolutely.
But I'm just so confident that if people try it and give it their full arse, then it'll work for them.
And I'm 7.5 years off the booze, and I'm still as passionate about it as I was. You know, it actually is that great. It will produce all of these incredible things. And again, like you say, look, we slip and slide, but we have to get back on the horse. And I suppose what you like, if you look at your relapses, your last relapse was a day, as opposed to beforehand. So like it is now, you do get incrementally more, you do get incrementally better along the way. We might wrap up now, but is there anything else that is burning within your soul that you want to say to us?
No, just that if there's anyone out there wondering, like that I've tried to remove booze from their life so many times and just keep a couple of weeks off and keep falling back into the same patterns, and they know deep down that their life would be so much better if they remove booze, try a community, whether they join my community or another community you can find out online. If you look and think, my drink is not that bad, but you can see it causing issues, do something about it now, before, because I do believe that anyone can cross that line into addiction. So if it's bad for you now, it's not going to get any better. Yeah. And you need connection. I do believe that connection is the key to removing alcohol and having a good life.
Yeah, it's what we're here to do. We're here to connect. We have all these different ways in which we are designed, you know, even something like breastfeeding, that we're designed to attach to other humans, so isn't it like your eye to look into their eye when you're breastfeeding or whatever, but like it's attachment, it's having, this is the nerdiest thing I'll ever say, but like practically a week never goes by where I don't think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? What a nerd. And I'll always talk
that,
about
that is such a nerd.
I do often say to Gary, Gary, but what about Maslow's hierarchy of needs? And he goes, absolutely, Olivia.
No, it's so true.
It's so true. When all our needs are met, physiological, love, support, esteem, you know, when we feel like we're worthy and we matter and we're connected and we're safe, then we can start the kind of altruistic, you know, part of our lives as well. And it feels to me like that's where you're going. So again, I'm talking about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Kelly, where can people find you if they want to join this amazing community, if they want to connect with you and all the good stuff?
So it's alcoholuncensored.co.uk is a website, and you can find out all about us there and join the community there as well. We've also got a mobile app that you can download from the App Store, and there's a free subscriber sign up on there, so you can get a kind of look at the What's On calendar and any up and coming meetups, and just a few bits and bobs in there that's updated regularly. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok under Alcohol Uncensored.
TikTok. Check you out with the young ones.
And then, you know, the young kids.
Yeah, and come here. You've been very busy with all that. Like doing it all, the app and everything. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, it's been a learning curve. I didn't think it was going to be as difficult. Do you know, I was like, I'll be fine. A little bit cocky. I thought, it'll be fine. But thankfully, a lot of the members that I've got came over from Over the Influence. And they've just been all so supportive. Like, if there's been glitches, they've been very, very patient. I've been very lucky that way. But we're a community and we're doing it together. As much as I'm kind of picking up the flak and doing the IT stuff and everything, everybody's just so supportive and helpful. And that's the way I want it to be. I don't want it to be, oh, Kelly's in charge, Kelly's the founder. I want it to be a community where if people have got ideas and people have got, like, we've got Ben in the community. He's going to put a survey out for me to find out where people want to go next year for events. And the hosts, the Zoom hosts, are just very supportive as well. We're just a team. But yeah, it's been a learning curve to say the least.
Amazing. Good for you. I'm delighted for you. It's amazing.
Thank you,
Kelly.
Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.